Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News In-Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from In-Screen Media is on the line with me as always. Hey there, Colin.
I am here, Will, and I got a very interesting email from our friends at ATT this week. It was telling me that my DirecTV Now service was going to get a new name. And this new name, I thought, was really confusing. So, did you see this?
I did, yeah. So, sounds like RIP DirecTV Now. How didn't last very long in the market. It's going to be updated, the name, to AT&T TV Now, which both of us are confused by, right?
I am very confused by it. If we do a quick review, so there's DirecTV, still exists at the top end. I suppose the next service down, the next premium service down, is this new thing called ATT TV, which is pretty much, I think it's supposed to be DirecTV, but without the satellite. It's over broadband, and you need a dongle to get it, and I'm guessing it'll have broadly the same channel packages that DirecTV has. And then below that is, I guess, ATT TV Now, which is the renamed DirecTV Now, which is their virtual MVPD. But they have one more service in the family, Will, and that, of course, is ATT Watch TV, which is a real skinny bundle, a non-sports bundle that AT&T is giving away to its premium wireless subscribers, and the rest of us can subscribe. I think it's $15 a month for that, for a bundle of primarily Warner Media channels, I think. But I don't know about you, Will, but if I'm a customer, figuring out which ATT TV I need or want is going to be pretty difficult, right?
Sounds pretty confusing to me, and I have to say I'm really not sure why the change from DirecTV Now, because it wasn't that long ago that DirecTV Now was really on the upswing in the virtual MVPD world. And they invested, I think, a fair amount in creating that brand and promoting it. So it did have awareness in the category. And now they're going to ditch it entirely and go with AT&T TV Now, which is going to be a whole new brand that they're going to have to promote, as you say, at the same time as they're going to be creating the other new brand, AT&T TV, which is also going to carry a special marketing burden, I think, of having to persuade people to actually get the dongle. So it seems like they're biting off a lot at the same time and going to create some real confusion in the marketplace.
I think so too, Will. And, you know, I was talking to my friend Jeff Baumgartner over at Light Reading earlier this week about this change, about the name change from DirecTV Now to ATT TV Now. And both of us were sort of scratching our heads. And he said, why did they walk away from the DirecTV brand? Why didn't they call ATT TV DirecTV Stream? And you know what? I think they should employ Jeff, because that's a better name, I think, than ATT TV. When you say DirecTV Stream, you know exactly what you're getting, right? You're getting DirecTV, but over broadband, which is what they're providing with ATT TV. And instead, they're going to create this whole new branding exercise with a horrible name. All those T's running together like that is going to make it even difficult to say the product. But, you know, I guess they've paid some marketing people a lot of money to come up with that new naming, so they must be happy with it.
Yeah, the only, and we were just talking about this, of course, on last week's podcast, we were discussing whether AT&T can put all of its different video assets together, put the puzzle pieces together, but this is yet another twist. The only thing I can think of here is that putting it under the AT&T, the video service under the AT&T brand name, helps them on the packaging side with the wireless service. So maybe they believe that unifying under the AT&T brand will help them cross-sell the services or put them together in bundles better than they could have done with DirecTV Now. Who knows?
Well, as you say, who knows? All I can tell you is that it's got me confused, and I bet it's got a bunch of other people confused too.
Yeah, good luck with that. So anyway, we wanted to provide a little bit of continuity on the AT&T DirecTV Now story this week from last week's podcast, but we do want to shift over to talking about some data on the streaming and streaming media player market that you and I each wrote about this week. So provides a good snapshot of how things are going. So you're going to get us started with that.
I am. Yeah, there was some new interesting data from Parks Associates this week. And basically, they were doing a quick review of the streaming media player market. And our listeners will remember streaming media players are things like Roku's and Apple TV and all of the sticks and boxes that allow you to stream video directly to your TV. The market has been growing pretty strongly for quite some time. But, you know, both Parks and Comscore agree on one thing, and that is that the market slowed a lot. Parks said that they saw that there's now 39% of U.S. broadband homes have one of these streaming boxes or sticks. But that was just a 1% increment from 2018, same time in 2018. And that's exactly what Comscore said. They said the same thing. Their basis was a bit different. They were talking about Wi-Fi households, and they said 49% of Wi-Fi households have one of these sticks or boxes. But that was only up 1% from 2018. And that really surprised me because, well, you know, we've seen tremendous growth at Roku, Amazon Prime Video Amazon Fire TV boxes have really been growing, I thought, pretty strongly in the market. But this data suggests that maybe things have slowed down a lot. Parks actually talked about the market share, and they basically said that the market's pretty much between two devices in the US, and that's the Roku and Fire TV. Fire TV is growing pretty strongly, 6% increase, and Roku's 2%. But I think it's mostly Roku. Roku is dominating the market, and certainly when you add in smart TVs, Roku really is dominating the market. But and that actually brings me to the interesting thing here. But our listeners shouldn't think that connected TV as a whole has slowed. It really hasn't. Just the emphasis has switched. It switched from the streaming media players over to smart TVs themselves. So when people are going and getting their new TV, they're getting a smart TV. They're using that. And that increased, according to Comscore, 7%. The penetration of smart TVs increased 7%. I'm just rereading this data. Actually, as far as I can see right now, it's not 7%. It's 23% increase of in Wi-Fi households over the last year. So that continues to grow very strongly. And that, of course, is in our friend at Roku's favor, because Roku is actually one of the biggest providers of TV operating systems to the smart TV market. And it just so happens that the number one television seller at the beginning of this year, which was TCL, is a licensor of Roku. And many, many of those TCL TVs that ship actually ship with the Roku operating system. So when you add together the streaming media players and the smart TV bits, Will, it looks to me like Roku is clearly way ahead in the US market from the standpoint of connected television. Now, not true in Europe. In Europe, Amazon with the Fire TV box is doing extremely well. I can tell you for sure it is number one in Germany and in the UK. I just did a survey last quarter, in Q1, sponsored by Gracenote, which is available from my site in the TV Universe report for free. And that basically showed that Amazon Fire TV is number one in Germany and number one in the UK by a long way, I would say. The next down is Apple TV in both markets, and it is pretty far back, half the penetration, as if I remember rightly, half the penetration of Fire TV. So connected TV continues to grow. It just looks like the emphasis has switched now to smart TVs. I don't know about you, but I can't wait to hear from Roku this week. Next week they'll be providing their results, and maybe they can give us some confirmation or not that the SMP streaming media player market is slowing.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what to make of this, that the SMP market is flatlining for all practical purposes, but the smart TV market is still growing pretty strongly, because it was just, I don't know, maybe a week or so ago, a couple weeks ago, when Amazon said, Amazon had its Fire TV Stick on sale for, I think, $15, and also said that on the two Prime days that Roku, I thought they said Roku SMPs were among their top selling products. So it seems counterintuitive somehow that the stick and box market is flatlining, as you said. I'm just wondering whether it's the fact that the smart TVs have become so incredibly inexpensive now that when people think about wanting to get a TV to watch their OTT content, that they just realize that it's worth buying a whole new TV and cycling out rather than getting a stick or box, regardless of how inexpensive they are.
Well, I think that there could be certainly some of that. When people do come to replace their televisions, they're replacing them obviously with a smart TV. And, you know, when they see an attractive operating system like Roku on that TV or Fire TV on the TV, then, you know, they know they're getting a great product that's going to be supported and it's easy to use and all of that. So I think that certainly is an issue. But I got a feeling that the SMPs, the streaming media players, are still selling pretty strongly, Will. But what's happening now is people are going to the second and third TV in their home. And they're continuing to buy, but they're now connecting those televisions, which maybe had not been connected. They're now making them connected as well. So I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on. I think that I remember seeing data saying that the average home still has 2.5 TVs or 2.7 TVs, or something like that in the US. So maybe that's what's driving the streaming media player market now. And I should say that both of the penetration numbers I gave, the ComScore and the Parks data, is of households. That's not televisions, it's households. So maybe that's what's going on here, Will.
Yeah, it's also going to be, I think, interesting to watch it as we go into the holiday season later this year and see what shapes up. I feel like we could be seeing the price of sticks normalize, not be on sale, but actually normalize around $15 or $20. And we'll see what impact that low pricing has on the market as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to correct something I said a little earlier, Will. Actually, what ComScore says is that the number of Wi-Fi homes with a connected television, that is, it could be a smart TV or it could be connected with an SMP or a game console, that increased 7% between March 2018 and March 2019. So, as I said, connected televisions the number of homes with those continues to increase strongly. And the smart TVs were up very strongly, 23%.
Yep, absolutely. There you go. So the other piece of data that I was following this week, or other report that came out, was from Limelight, saying that 42% of Americans now stream and download movies or TV shows on a daily basis. And that is actually the highest percentage of the nine different countries where Limelight ran its survey. So 42% of Americans, only India was even close in terms of daily movie and TV show streaming and downloading. They had 41.4% doing so on a daily basis. And the lowest level was France with 21.2%. Surprisingly, Singapore second lowest with 26.8%. So Americans leading the way in terms of streaming and downloading. On a global basis, in terms of the age groups that are the biggest consumers, 26 to 35 year olds appear to be leading the way with 51.4%, so a little bit over half downloading and streaming on a daily basis, and a whopping 82% doing so on a weekly basis. So 82% of those 26 to 35 year olds consuming streaming or downloaded video on a weekly basis. No surprise, older consumers, 60 year old and above, had the lowest, just 15.2% either streaming or downloading. Then an area that I know you're going to take objection to is some data that they had about willingness to pay, said that 57% of respondents said that they would be willing to pay on a global basis, would be willing to pay for movies or TV shows. That led the way of all media categories, followed by ebooks, music, video games, etc. And that by country, Germany had the highest rate of willingness to pay for movies and TV shows at 64.2%. The U.S. was just slightly back of it at 63.9%, and then the U.K. 62.7%, etc. 18 to 25 year olds with the highest willingness to pay on a global basis, 65.5% of them. So I thought those were some interesting data points coming out of the Limelight report this week. You had some different data on the willingness to pay side, which I know you wanted to share.
I do, but before we get there, Will, one of the things that really popped for me that I find surprising, and I've sort of made a note to myself to go check into, was that India number you quoted, say that says 41.4% in India stream or download on a daily basis. And there's 1 billion people in India. That's over 400 million people, Will. That's a huge number. I've never seen any numbers like that out of India before. So I really wanted to go back and take a look. And I got to say that it's most in the Indian market is mostly dominated by mobile. So that I would think that most of that streaming and downloading was actually taking place on mobile networks. I found that number to be the most surprising.
Now, Colin, is the billion that you just cited, is that 18 years or older, or is that total population?
No, I think that's total population, Will. So, you know, we're talking about probably 800 million or more adults in that market. So, you know, it's still 300 million adults in the market. And I know for a fact that there are nowhere near that many broadband connections. It's like a broadband penetration is actually quite low in India. It's primarily a mobile market. So that data really did surprise me. The other data, as you say, the other data was this willingness to pay data. And the reason it pulled me up pretty sharply, Will, was because I did a survey. I mentioned the TV, my TV Universe report, which I did the survey in the first quarter of 2019. And one of the questions that I asked, two questions about T-commerce. One was buying and the other one was renting. And I asked, have you rented a movie or TV show in the last month? I think it was the last month. And the numbers are pretty different, Will. Obviously, that's a different question to willingness to pay. But what I found was very consistent, that in the UK actually leads both in renting and in the willingness to buy a movie over Germany. And it's a big difference, Will. The UK, 33%, a third said that they had rented a movie or show, a TV show, 28% in Germany. And buying was actually slightly higher. This actually was, I was quite surprised about this as well, that the number of people who said that they had bought a movie, 46% in the UK and 35% in Germany. So, you know, the Limelight data has that reversed and seems to show that a lot more people are doing it than my data shows. So again, they did ask willingness, which is a little bit different to did you actually pay. But I will say also, the other thing that makes me wonder about this, Will, is that Germany in Europe is actually one of those markets that is least interested in paying for TV and for movies. And in fact, I can tell you almost exactly that pay TV penetration is lower there than in pretty much every other European country. Free-to-air is still dominant in that market. The German market, their willingness to pay that, I don't know, they may be telling Limelight something completely different to what they actually do, because they do not like to pay, and they're only just beginning to really get on the pay TV bandwagon.
That may be the case. I hear you. Willingness to pay is a tough question for people to answer. There's lots of different ways to respond there. And who knows, maybe it seems maybe the Limelight data is overstated there and UK is leading the way. So.
Yeah. I'm pretty convinced that the UK, the willingness to pay, I would have expected the UK to come out on top. The penetration of pay television is way higher there. So is the penetration of SVOD services like Netflix. And certainly from my data, it suggests that they're much more willing. They actually are paying, more of them are paying for movies and renting movies than in Germany. So anyway, interesting question there about that Limelight data.
Yeah. All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground here, I think, today. Hopefully we haven't confused our listeners with all the different data points that we were sharing. But I think we are just about out of time here.
I think we are, and I just will say that TV Universe report available for free at the Endscreen Media website.
Yeah, and we'll also include some links to yours and my write-ups on these reports as well at our respective websites. And I think that's all we have for this week. So, Colin, good chatting, and we will see all of our listeners next week on the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast.